Hello, this is Larry Cruz, and you're listening to 90.1 FM, KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio.
Welcome to Isla Earth. Considering all the animals trapped in the Los Angeles La Brea tar pits, you'd think the gas it's belching up is caused by something that it ate. Actually, the gas is caused by something eating it. Environmental scientists from the University of California in Riverside recently discovered hundreds of previously unknown species of bacteria thriving in this gooey grave of plants and animals from the Pleistocene age. Existing in a highly toxic environment with no water and little or no oxygen, what's really remarkable about these microbes is that they eat petroleum and give off gas. It's undetermined whether these oil-eating organisms are descendants of ancient bacteria or offspring of some more recent strains. One thing for certain, however, is that they have plenty of potential for present-day applications. For example, they could be used to help clean up oil spills, enhance oil recovery methods, or clean out the holds of supertankers. They may even help create whole new classes of medicines. But until then, their biggest draw is still at the La Brea Tar Pits, where all they do is burp. Learn more at islaearth.org. Isla Earth is produced by the Catalina Island Conservancy with support from its Fund for a Sustainable Planet, because Earth is an island.
On March 29th, Saturday, the outreach team will host a Veterans Benefit Fair and Resource Expo at the Kansas City VA Medical Center, 4801 Linwood. The event will be held from 9 a.m. to noon. Approximately 30 local organizations, federal agencies, and VA entities have confirmed their participation and will be sharing information on veteran benefits and community resources. Again, that's Saturday, March 29th at the VA Medical Center. This message, a public service of 90.1 FM, KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio.
So many allies, so many allies, so feel. Secrets to be told. My bed's on fire. Right. And it just kind of ends like that. Because they want you to listen to the whole album. It's not just about the one song. All right. Yeah, no, that sounds really good, too. We'll have to listen to that in just a few moments. Man, so much good music out there. You know why? I don't know. People need to listen to music. So they made a lot of really good stuff over the years. Those people did. But we're not here right now, folks, okay? We're not here to talk about music. Even though we just heard a bunch. I mean, the last thing we just heard was a little Frank Zappa from his 1988 release Guitar. That was Sexual Harassment in the Workplace. Before that, more Frank Zappa from You Are What You Is. That was Goblin Girl. Before that, we were in the 80s also with The Smiths, Talking Heads, a simulated trip back to the 80s with Arcade Fire, and before that, three songs from Thom Yorke. One straight up from him and two from Radiohead. Started the hour off way back when with Adams for Peace, Staircase, and The Butcher. Yeah, no, that's right, because it's fun to come down and play a little music, but then we got to get to the nitty-gritty. The very important responsibility and duty talking about what is going on in the world. And what's been going on for 2 weeks is that a Boeing 777 flying from Malaysian Airlines, which apparently is still selling tickets. People are still flying on airlines run by Malaysian Airlines. People are still getting on planes piloted by Malaysian Airlines. I mean, you know, let's be honest here. Why? Why would people still? The front page of the New York Times yesterday on Sunday was a four-picture split shot. I don't know, there's probably some journalistic photojournalism term for what it was. But it was four photographs spliced together that demonstrated what it was like to fly on an airplane from Kuala Lumpur. I feel like I'm talking about an Australian bear-like animal. Kuala Lumpur, somewhere in Malaysia, off to Beijing, which is where that airliner was supposed to go in the first place. The Flight 370 that has apparently disa-freaking-peered, which is a technical term that the FAA uses when it's been 2 weeks and they haven't been able to locate even the slightest bit of the airplane. Between Chinese, I mean, you know, the Chinese need to clean the lenses off their satellites. They keep finding these large objects just floating around in the ocean, and they're unable to actually identify what they are. A 72-foot by 30-foot object just floating around. Not a boat, we don't think. We don't know. Could just be a piece of dust on the satellite camera, satellite imaging apparatus. It could just be a big-ass piece of dust. And nobody knows. But people are still, so that was the front page of the New York Times on Sunday, which is a $6 paper, folks. $6. And it was a four-way split image of what it was like to fly from Kuala Lumpur to Beijing. And apparently people are still doing it on Malaysian Airlines, and those planes are making it. They're flying in there. I don't know what the value of that was. The New York Times, they have reasons. We could talk to Arthur Sulzberger. He doesn't return my phone calls, but I mean, I'm just saying in theory we could talk to him about what that image was about. Is this that fascinating? Yeah, no, it actually is. But do they really have to go? I mean, people are, and by people I mean Wolf Blitzer and Anderson Cooper, are completely awestruck by this situation. But did they really have to, did the front page of the New York Times really have to have just, you know, pictures of women sitting in airline seats? You know, the stewardess handing out sodas to say that, you know, no, sometimes airplanes, in fact, not just sometimes, but most of the time. I mean, everyone knows the statistics tell us that airline travel is the safest way to go. Is it the most comfortable way to go? No. Safe by, and by that we don't mean that the various transportation security agents from all over the world won't be going through your personal belongings and stealing your iPads. Not that kind of safety. It's just usually planes don't fall out of the sky. And even more unusual, planes don't disappear. That's even more rare for a plane to just disappear. Statistically, doesn't happen too often. I think statistically, you're more likely to crash into and disappear into Troost Lake than you would be to disappear out of the thin air. And Sarah Palin raised a good point in her role as a contributor on Fox News, is maybe the plane flew to heaven. But Sarah, let's be honest here. It was flying out of Malaysia. It was going to Beijing, okay? There may have been some God-fearing Christians on the plane, sweetie, but most of them were probably Muslims or Buddhists, which is essentially like being a pagan, which means no go to heaven. If the plane actually did fly to an afterlife, it was probably hell. So, wrong again, Sarah. Plane did not fly to heaven. And there's, speaking of heaven, no, we don't need to go there just yet. We'll go there a little bit later. A lot of self-reflection here in the metropolitan area this week, but we can get into that in just a little bit. No, they don't know what happened to this plane. Planes are not supposed to disappear. They're very large objects. They're very expensive objects too. Yeah, the airlines have a vested interest in the planes not disappearing because they're worth tens of millions of dollars. These airplanes are. So there's a vested interest that the airline has in them not disappearing. And they're back to blaming it on lithium batteries again. I mean, at some point, we're going to have to realize that maybe the traditional means, you know, between the various navies of the world, you know, the FBI, the Chinese satellite imaging people, whoever those are, and the Taiwanese illustrators, that maybe it's time to reach out and go a little bit farther than has already been gone by the investigators trying to figure out what happened to Malaysian Airlines Flight 370. And I really think that it's time to talk to David Copperfield about this. I mean, he's got experience. I mean, there was some years ago, back when I was a child, I do remember David Copperfield. He did make the Statue of Liberty disappear. That did happen. So, and he returned it as well. And I don't even think he had to be asked. I think he knew that he had to return it. But nevertheless, it might be time to talk to David Copperfield about Malaysian Airlines Flight 370. He might have some insight into it. And we're literally down to the last two possibilities, okay? Are that maybe the plane flew to heaven or hell, according to Sarah Palin, or my idea that David Copperfield might be able to reverse engineer some magic or something like that to return the airline. It's plane, okay? And we're literally there. I mean, one can't help. I'm going to get all weird on you folks. One can't help but remember the only other times that I think we can realistically say that we were not sure what happened to the airplane was on September 11th, 2001. And there he goes again. I know you people at home in your cars, working away at the factory, whatever you're doing right now, sitting in your jail cell, you're going, God damn it, Ben, there you go again with these old 9/11 conspiracies, you son of a... Yeah, exactly. My mother's a beautiful woman, by the way. There he goes again with his 9/11 was an inside job. Rabid, frothing at the mouth, 9/11 conspiracies. But literally, the only other times that one can think of large commercial airliners disappearing were the ones that disappeared into the Pentagon and into that soft ground in Shanksville. Ground so soft that it was able to swallow up a 747. I don't know. Is that possible? Does that work like that? And literally, Donald Rumsfeld removed all the wreckage of the flight that hit the Pentagon in a duffel bag. I mean, there was very small pieces left. Essentially, planes that disappeared. Is there a direct connection? I don't know. What is the point here? I do not know. Is it literally, did Vladimir Putin steal the damn thing? So Wolf Blitzer would have something other than Crimea River and the Ukraine talk about in the endless 24-hour news cycle. Is Vladimir Putin did it? Did you do it, Mr. Putin? Because you always have the people say, hey, man, what do they not want us to know? What do they not want us to be paying attention to, man? What is the government covering up, man? What is the government covering up, man? Nothing. I don't know. Everything. Nothing and everything at the same time. Is Flight 370 a distraction? Absolutely. Is everything that the news talks about ad nauseum a distraction? Yes. Yes, the answer is yes. Have we gotten scant coverage of the Ukraine situation because of this? I don't know. Yeah, maybe. Does it matter? I can't believe what I'm surprised at is that Vladimir Putin used the concept of popular sovereignty to undermine the balance of power in Eastern Europe. God bless you, guy, that I am really comfortable being the president of a country I don't live in. I mean, Vladimir Putin's all cute and cuddly when he's way over there. I mean, some people say that it's wrong to be an isolationist. I say I am one. We're in Missouri here. Let's be honest here. Some of you are in Kansas. Some of you may be listening from other parts of the world, but hey, for the people not listening on KKFI.org, we're in Missouri. We're in Kansas. We are extremely well insulated from the rest of the world, and that is a good thing. A very, very good thing. And I'm totally cool with Vladimir Putin being the president of a country I do not live in, nor will I ever live in. I'm totally fine with that. Totally cool with me. But popular sovereignty, the people of Crimea River, the people in Crimea River, they just went ahead and said, you know what? We want to be Russians. Why not? We all speak of the Russian. We all look to Mother Moscow. The Soviets or something. That's who we want to be. And what are you going to do? I mean, literally, the United States, I mean, they started putting sanctions and freezing the assets of people who are Vladimir Putin's political allies and friends. We're not sanctioning the government of Russia. No, we're sanctioning individual people who are friends with Vladimir Putin. That was the United States government's response. I was kind of like, really? I mean, that seems a little petty, doesn't it? I mean, we're literally, and by friends of Vladimir Putin, we mean these, you know, oligarchic types, these political, you know, powerhouses, these oligarchies that they have over there in the Russia and the Ukraine, targeting them. That's kind of just like a bully move, no? I mean, I understand. A lot of people can, you could easily look at American foreign policy and go, yes, Ben, that's a bully move. That's what the United States does. That's the job of the State Department. John Kerry is the bully in chief. We're there to bully the rest of the world into submission to what the good old US of A wants you to do, wants you to be. But I thought it was a little, you know, a little childish, a little churlish, if you will, that the United States government was literally putting sanctions on Vladimir Putin's friends. not necessarily the great display. I mean, we need, I mean, we're getting very close in the United States where we're going to have one of those military parades. You know, where we get some helicopters and some mobile ICBM missile launching truck equipment. And I'm sure we can train the Marines how to goose step and have a military parade. We can beat some chests, you know? We can sing some patriotic songs. It'll be a lot of fun. Because some people would prefer the Cold War to still be, you know, raging on. Because, you know, it's like the way the neocons morphed from what they were into what they are and what they were and what they always will be. Well, it's just the transition between communism to terrorism. The same foreign policy, different ism. But some people, because the Cold War was easier for people to wrap their minds around. You know, Russia's a place, Moscow's a location. The Russians are a real people. Communism was, you know, was actually going on. They called themselves that. The Soviet Union really kind of played the whole theme of dictatorship of the people, that kind of thing. It was just very easy. It's not this murky global war on terrorism, kind of just hard to put your finger on. Where the FBI during the Cold War did not have to create the existential threat of the Soviet Union. That was created by the military-industrial complex. It's not like it is with terrorism, where you have these cycles where the FBI is literally creating plots that they can then foster and protect and nourish and grow and then destroy and say, look at how safe we're keeping you.